stated the need of preaching and benevolence, and then tonight we're going to look at the itinerary of the things that I sought to accomplish while I was there. We left off this morning talking about Metaspe, where we spent 2 days in preaching and teaching, and were able to baptize about 12 people there, and it was in a denominational church, and we were able to have some good discussions, and that has been an ongoing process. There have been 3 different visits to that particular place in the last year, and it's resulted in 3/4 of the people have been converted. And so, as I told you this morning, they're very rapidly going to be put out of that building because it belongs to a denomination, and they're not going to allow them to continue to meet there when they're teaching things that are not believed or taught and practiced by that particular denomination. We next went to Cebu. Cebu is the second largest city in the Philippines. There's over 2 million people that live there. And we went to a place called Taliban. And what that is a congregation that is made up of different denominations. It's what we would call the closest thing to a community church. And we had 8 baptized there, and we spoke there on 3 different occasions over those 2 days, and we had some good question and answer back and forth. And this is the work of Bogo City with Gil and Martin Ramirez. And they are the local preachers who have opened the door to this particular congregation. And as we had fact in the second day, we baptized 9. Now this is the only place that I've ever been that I had to get weighed before I got on the plane. In Metaspe, the plane only holds so much weight. And so they weigh everything that goes on the plane. Every bag, every box, every person. And they only take a certain amount of weight. Because if they take more weight, then it's very dangerous when they land. And so we all had to do that, and it's kind of a first-time experience for me. And no, I didn't break the scale. I knew somebody's going to ask. But no, I didn't break the scale. This is the outside of the building of where we were at. As you can see, it's very, very simplistic. If you notice in the bottom picture, it's very difficult for you to see, but in this building there were Christmas decorations all over the wall. And one of the lessons that we taught was about religious holidays. And again, that's an interesting concept when you talk about things that people are practicing that are contrary to God's will. Now, this is some of the things that we talked about. One of the things that we emphasize in our preaching in the Philippines is the original gospel. To get back to the Bible. To get back to what the Bible says. And to get back to the original teaching of God's Word. And to show that denominationalism has been developed over the centuries and is a departure from the Word of God. And while that's not a very resonating message in our country, it is a very resonating message in that country. They understand. They follow their Bibles, and they follow along, and they ask good questions, and they make the connections. And what we call connecting the dots. When you begin to explain why the things they do are contrary to God's will, you can see their minds turning, and they can connect the dots. And the reason they can do that is because they're open-minded. They're not burdened down by clinging to something that they believe is right. They are open-minded enough to examine it. And that's when we have great results. Now, this is during the worship service, and this picture on the right is in a pool in a hotel that we had to pay a fee to use in order to baptize these 9 individuals. And usually we don't do that. Usually we go out to the sea or we go to a body of water. But in this particular place, there was no water that was close. This was the closest water. And they have an ongoing they have an ongoing they have an ongoing resolution with this hotel that they allow them to use part of their pool in order to accommodate us to baptize, and we baptized them about 8 o'clock at night. Now, on Sunday morning, December the 8th, we went to Bogo City. Now, Bogo City is one of the places that was hit by the typhoon. It's in northern Cebu. It's about 2 hours from the main city of Cebu City. And it was one of the places that Yolinda, the typhoon, it was one of the places that was damaged during the typhoon. We gathered remnants of the three congregations that were affected by that typhoon that Sunday morning. And there was about 77 of them that were there, and when we had services on Sunday morning. During the time, I spoke on the subject of why bad things happen to good people. And I talked about how that sometimes natural disasters, we can feel that, you know, we're trying to serve God, and yet these things devastate us and take away our livelihood and destroy our homes. And why does that happen when we're trying to be faithful to God? And what I tried to do in that lesson, and I was asked to preach that lesson by the two Filipino preachers that were there, and what you're trying to do is encourage people who are going through a very difficult time, who have just lost everything, and they're trying to put their life back together, and we sought to be an encouragement to them. Ron spoke about the resurrection of Christ, and following those two sermons, we had nine that were baptized in Bogo City. Now, while we were in Cebu, we went to the church that Jonathan Carreño preaches at, and we had a preacher study. And what the preacher study is, it is getting together young preachers and having them for 5 days for 12 hours a day and teaching them and instructing them in the study of God's Word to ground them in their preaching in the Philippines. Why do we do that? Because most of the people that we convert that start preaching in the Philippines have come from denominationalism. They have to be taught. They have to be instructed. One of the things that I got involved with when I first went over there is we have what we call preacher schools. And we had them for a month. And we had them for 30 days. And we had them for 10 hours a day, 7 days a week. But it became to be very costly. And it became too costly to continue those classes. And so what we did and what they did over there is they began to compartmentalize them and minimize them and to do them all over the Philippines instead of in one place. We were doing them in Tagigaraw, where Rody Gumpad preaches. He did those classes from 2000 to 2011. And every April and May, we would go there for 30 days, and we would have 25 to 30 men that we would have there every day, and we would have classes for a month. Now what we've done is we've consolidated it, and we've compartmentalized it, and we've taken it and we've shorn it down in order to try to give them as much material as we can. Jonathan Carreño was the host. We had it from 8 to 7. We worked every day from 8 to 7, and then we had questions. We'd get home about 10 o'clock at night. And so it was about a 12, 14-hour day. And we did that for 5 days. During this thing, there is a series of books called Basic Bible Doctrines. It's by Robert Harpreiter. And what it is, it's a very basic things in biblical doctrines. We go through those four books. Every student in the preacher training gets a set of these books, gets a Bible, gets a concordance, and also gets a Bible dictionary. And then we teach them at night how to use the Bible concordance, the Bible dictionary, the Bible maps, and we show them how they're used, and then we show them how they can be an aid to their study. And this is after they've sat through 10 hours of classes, we have this study at night before they eat. And we do this every night, And again, it's a lot of information, and it's given to them in a very small time period, but they just, to give you an example, 24 people signed up, but 77 attended, because that's how much interest there is. But we only had books for 24 people. And so that's how much interest there is. There's always more interest in what we have the ability to do, because there's that many churches. In the Philippines, there are over 800 churches. And most of them are very small. And some of the preachers work in two or three different congregations. And so they have to be taught. They have to be grounded. And a lot of the work that we've done in the last few years is to teach and train those people to do their own work and have less dependence upon us. And that needs to be done. And that's an ongoing process that needs to be done, this continuing grounding and teaching these Filipino preachers to go about in their country and to do the work of an evangelist, and that's what we tried to do. During this 5-day class, Ron missed 3 days because of his foot, and that's when I got sick. The Wednesday that I got sick, I got sick on Thursday. On Wednesday, I had to teach 5 straight hours. And it's something that we normally never do, but I had to do it because Ron was not there. And so I took up the slack, and that kind of started me down my downward slide. And that's when I had an upper respiratory virus. And the next day after that is when I got the bad water. But this is kind of how the class is set up. There's tables. There's long tables where they can put their Bibles and their books. And they have tables. And the students are up front. And the other people that sit behind sit and listen. And the picture on the right, John, Lordy, Ron, and Jack, these are the Filipino preachers that we work with. Jonathan Carreño is the local preacher at this particular congregation in Cebu City. If you look at the picture at the bottom on the left, you can see it's packed. It's like that everywhere we go. We have a limited number of people, but there's always more people that sit in. And many of those people sitting in the audience are denominational preachers. They are preachers of other religions. And they sit in there for a week and hear nothing but the Bible preached. And it has an effect. That's where we get a lot of our invitations to go to their places and to teach at their places, because they hear the truth. And that's something that's greatly beneficial. And many of those men will be converted. Many of them will be converted to the truth. And then they'll be where the students were. They'll have to be grounded. They'll have to be trained, because they have to be have the knowledge to do that. As you can see, it's very intense. I mean, you're talking about, and we're talking in a building with no air conditioning, no padded seats, 10 hours, 12 hours a day, and they do not complain. Matter of fact, they keep you there all night if you want to answer their questions. You know, we have to rest. We don't have the stamina that they do. And to tell you what, and one of the things that we have to do is we take care of their needs while they're there. In the Philippines, you can't just come and go like we can. We get in the car, we go home and rest, and we come back the next day. You can't do that in the Philippines. It's not possible. And so, you know where those 24 men sleep? They sleep on the floor, up on the third floor. And that's where they sleep for the week that we have this class. And again, that's so they can stay there, and at the end of the class, then they go home. And then they go home to their families. So they're away for a week. They're away for a week, and all they do is they sleep, and they study, and they listen. And again, we have more people sign up than what we can do. And each of the men that we have in these classes, we give each of them $150 worth of books. Books that they would never buy, books that they could never afford, that have information, the Bible dictionary, the concordance, the Bible. None of those things that they can afford, we supply that. And that comes from individuals and the people that send us over there. And that's part of the cost that's involved in doing these classes. But brethren, it's very necessary in order to ground these preachers to do the work that they're going to have to do. And these are some other pictures of the classes. And one of the things that's really helped us is PowerPoint. Because you can cover a lot more information with PowerPoint. Because you can put it all on the screen. And it's made it very efficient. And they love it because they can take notes and they can copy it down and they can remember it. And so it's made our teaching even more effective. Man, it's hot. It's not as bad as March and May, so I'm pretty happy. It's not 90 and 100 humidity, so it's in the 80s, and that's great in the Philippines. I mean, we were kind of having a cool spell, and it was in the 80s. But it's very intense. And Americans, if you could see the pictures, the Filipinos, they're not affected by the heat, but we are. And sometimes we go home at noon to change our clothes because we're just drenched because it's so humid. But again, it's worth every bit of inconvenience to help these brethren grow. This is during a question and answer period. There was a young man there who was sitting towards the back, and he was a believer in eternal security. And he pressed me pretty heavily to try to defend eternal security. But he didn't get mad, he wasn't ugly, and we had a good discussion. And at the end of that discussion, after they were eating, after class was over, he came to me and he was worried that he offended me because he disagreed with me. Didn't offend me. That's how you learn. That's how you give and take. That's how you learn. We encourage them to tell us when they don't agree. We encourage them to ask their questions. That's how they learn. And that's how they'll grow in their understanding of God's Word. This is Brother Carreño, and this is Lordy on the fifth day. And one of our brethren caught his picture. If you see in the bottom corner on the left, this is the last day that we distribute the books. It's hard to explain. We put them on a table, and it's like saying go, and they're gone. In 5 minutes, they're gone. And they read them, and they study them. And they're so thankful for them. And those are things that they could never afford. We spend more money in these trips on material than we do anything. Because we give it all out. Because we know they can't afford it. And that's something we can pass on to them. The greatest part of this trip was planned before the typhoon in Leyte. When the typhoon in Leyte happened, it changed our itinerary. One of the places that we were to go and do this preacher training we did in Cebu, we were supposed to do that in Ormoc City. Ormoc City was one of the cities that was greatly affected by the typhoon, and 80% of the city was destroyed, including the hotel that we were going to have this class at. And so we had to reschedule it in Cebu City. But after that, then we determined to go to the areas that were affected by the typhoon. We went to Leyte. We went to the island of Leyte. And we looked at the three cities that were directly affected by the typhoon. Ormoc City, Tacloban, and Bogo City. Those are the three main cities that were devastated by. We could not get very far into Tacloban because it wasn't safe. The government would not secure your safety to go in there. And so we could not get very far in there. We had to get brethren to come to us in Ormoc City because it was not safe for us to go there. We could not spend the night there. We went there on a ferry, came back, and then went back the next day. The ferry took 3 hours. And it got us in about 1 o'clock in the morning, and then we got up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go back the next day. And we did that in order that we might be able to see as many of the brethren that were affected by the typhoon. And it had 225-mile-an-hour winds, 20 to 21-foot surges, 6,200 people are confirmed dead. 1,800 are still missing. They're finding them in, a lot of the fishermen are finding them in their nets as they go out and they're fishing. And some of them will never be found. We visited 5 of the churches in Leyte. Every one of them were destroyed. And every one of the members' homes were destroyed that were on the island of Leyte. That's where That's where the typhoon, that's where it made landmass. And that's where the greatest damage was done. We visited three churches in Bogo City and Cebu that were directly affected and destroyed by the typhoon. Now this is just some information for you. The path of the typhoon as it went through the country, it was the worst typhoon that ever hit the Philippine Islands. It had more devastation than any typhoon that had ever hit. In the place of Leyte, they have two or three typhoons every typhoon season. And what I believe, because there's not a great communication system, they just thought this was another typhoon, that they'd go to higher ground and they'd ride it out. Well, this wasn't that type of typhoon. This was one that was going to be worse than anyone they'd ever seen. And so that's why so many died. Now, Ormoc City, the only way to get there, because the roads were impassable, you had to take what they call a fast craft, or you had to take a ferry. We took both. And when we landed at the bus terminal. If you can see, it looks like it's framed. Well, that's because that's all that's left of the bus terminal. The roof and the walls were all destroyed by the hurricane, by the typhoon Yolindo. And so that's all that's left is a frame in the top of the roof of the bus terminal. So much death and so much destruction that it was a health risk to leave the dead unburied. And so they made mass graves. There's two of them. There's one in Leyte at Ormoc City, and there's two in Tacloban. And they had to do that for health reasons. So many people lost family members that they don't know where they're at, because they did the best they could to identify them, but then they had to be buried because it was a health risk. And so they made these two mass graves in Tacloban and in Leyte. And, of course, when we got there, they were covered up, but there were flowers and markers. It's hard to explain, brethren. It's just, you know, it'd be awful to lose a loved one, but it'd be awful not to know where they're at and not even to know where they're buried. But a lot of them, that's what happened because of the amount, the enormity of the loss of life. These are people that stood in line for days to get water. And these lines still existed when we got there. When we got there, these lines that you saw on the news, they were still there. Because everything had to be brought in. The water was contaminated. The sewers broke. The pipes broke. And so all the water was contaminated. And so there had to be water brought in, drinking water. Water for health reasons, it had to be brought in. So it's a really remarkable task. If you notice, anything that they have that they could put water in, that's what they stood in line. And look, you're talking about a gallon of water. That's all they wanted, was a gallon of water in order to help their families. This is some of the pictures we saw when we were there. You just see matchsticks. That's the best way I can describe it. Matchsticks. Houses, buildings, nothing but rubble. And it was not just in one place, it was everywhere. 80% of Ormoc City was destroyed. In Tacloban, the whole city was destroyed. They're rebuilding the whole city. The whole city was devastated and destroyed by the typhoon. This is kind of what we saw as we walked around. You notice in the middle, you have a walking path, and on the side, on either side of the road, all you see is destruction. This is in Tacloban City. And again, we could not go very far into there. If you look in the bottom left picture, this is a coconut grove. This is one of the things that they use in order to gain money. They grow and sell coconuts. Every coconut tree that we saw was uprooted or destroyed. The whole coconut grove was completely destroyed. That's one of their livelihoods that gives them money to support their families. It's completely destroyed. The building at the top on the right is a house of one of the preachers that was badly damaged in Tacloban City. School was destroyed. Matter of fact, there was no school standing that was not damaged to someone or destroyed by the typhoon. The one on the right was completely destroyed. And the one at the bottom, this is a high school. And it's, as you can see, it's pretty devastated and it's going to have to be rebuilt. This is one of the more remarkable things that we saw. This tree that Ron's standing by is probably, it had to be 100 years old. And it was as big around the tree as I've ever seen. And it was completely taken out by its roots. It looked like, you know, if you go in a garden and you're growing onions and you pull out the onion, that's what it looked like with this tree. Somebody just went in and pulled it out. And it was completely laying in the middle of the street. But the tree, where the tree was a mile away. The original spot of the tree was a mile away from where it laid here in the middle of the city. Here was one of the more remarkable things that we saw. You see that freighter on the right? That's in the middle of Tacloban, a half a mile from the water. A half a mile from the water, and it's sitting in the middle of the street. And they're trying to figure out how to get it out of there. Okay, what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to cut it up to get it out of there because they don't have the means of moving it. And that's the ship that Ron's standing in front of. And right in front of the ship, that's where the airport was. And it's nothing but matchsticks. It's been completely destroyed. I let the pictures, they speak for themselves. In the bottom right, this is what people were living in. Tents. Tents of temporary structures with tarps and canvas pulled over them to keep them out of the rain. Before we got there, about a week and a half after the typhoon hit, there was continuing rain. And so they tried to protect themselves from the elements. We met with three of the churches that meet there. And these are brethren who are members of the church in Leyte. And we gave them food, water, and we bought medicine. And we brought it in Cebu City and we delivered it there in order to give them some help, temporary help. The food that we gave them would probably last about 2 or 3 weeks. And that's what we tried to give every family that we met. We tried to do that to every family. We gave, while we were there for those 3 days, we gave about $10,000 out of different food, medicine, clothing, and temporary shelter. I gave about $5,000 and Ron gave about $5,000. These are other brethren in other places. The one on the right was the church that they were meeting in the island of Leyte. As you can see, it's been completely destroyed. And this is the church at the bottom that lost two of its members, lost their mothers in the typhoon. And they don't even know where they've never been able to find their bodies. And we were able to talk to those two. And one of them, both of them are preachers, and they lost their mother in the typhoon. Again, this is another church on the island of Leyte called the Canadian Brandy Island Church of Christ. We met with the brethren there and the local preacher, and we were able to give some benevolence to them. This is in Bogo City. This is north of Cebu. And this is the outskirts of Cebu City, about 2 hours out of it. If you see the tree that Ron's standing on, that was in the middle of a house. And one of the members of the church where Ron preaches sent funds to buy a saw, a power saw. And they cut that tree up. It's being cut up and the lumber is being used to rebuild their house. And so that was supplied by one of the members of the U.S. that sent funds to buy that chainsaw. It is difficult for me It is difficult for me to realize how blessed I am and to understand how devastating things can change in such a hurry. And in my country, when something like this happens, as I told you this morning, there's a lot of things we can do to rebuild. It is not so easy in the Philippines. Their lives will never be the same. They weren't very good to start with, and now they're even going to be more difficult. But yet I want to tell you something. They weren't wallowing in self-pity. They weren't wringing their hands. They were going to do the best they could to put their life back together. And whatever help you gave them, they were thankful. They were grateful. And they cried, and they wanted us to tell you and to tell the people that helped them that they are so appreciative of your love for them by not even knowing them and being touched by their devastation. And again, that is a commendable thing that we're able to be in a position to do that. After we left Leyte, we went back to Manila on the 18th and 19th. In the prison in Manila, there is a man named Willie Pastor. He was put in prison 4.5 years ago by a false charge when he killed a man that tried to harm and kill his parents. And he killed him in self-defense. The family of the man that was killed had money. And they kept the matter going through the courts until they found a judge that would give them what they wanted. And then they arrested him. And matter of fact, they arrested him in 2009 when he was attending, in Tagigaraw, he was attending the preacher study that I was a part of. And he was arrested and a warrant was placed for him at that time. And he went back home and that's when he was arrested. And he has been in prison since then. But instead of wallowing in prison and thinking about poor me, he's married. He has 4 children. 3 of them are in college. And instead of wallowing in self-pity, Brother Willie started a congregation within the prison walls. Today, there are 3 different churches meeting within the prison. 200 people have been converted through Willie's efforts. And he is very much respected by the Filipino prison officials, and they put him in the best part of the prison because of the respect that they have for him. Lord willing, in July, he's up for parole, and we are praying fervently that he will be paroled in July and be able to be returned to his family. We bought 800 Bibles in different dialects while we were in Manila, and sent them to the victims of the typhoon that lost them and also into other places who had requested them. This is outside of the prison. And when I talk about prison, I'm not talking about prison in our country. I'm talking about a real prison. Dirt floors. Very little food. No comforts at home. Really what prisons ought to be. Something that's undesirable that you don't want to go and you don't want to return. That's the conditions that Willie lives in. And again, we were able to go there and to teach about 140 inmates. And we had 46 responses the day that we were there. The next day, we went to a place called the Filipino Bible Society. And that's the picture you see in the bottom of me and Ron and Rhodey and the lady who helped us. And we go there because they sell Bibles in bulk. And we're able to buy them there much cheaper. And we bought them and we purchased them and then they sent them out where we wanted them to go. And they do not charge us to ship them. If we had to do that from our country, it would cost us a great deal of money. There is part of the agreement that we have. If we buy the mass of Bibles we buy, they put the shipping in and they do that for us for free. And so we were able to buy many Bibles. The last day that we were there on the 19th of December, we went to where Brother Rhodey is starting a new church in Manila. Brother Rhodey preaches 2 weeks in Tagigaraw, where he is from, which is a 13-hour bus ride from Manila. And then the other 2 weeks he spends in Manila trying to get this church up and running. And so he's really working with two different churches. This church in Manila is growing. This picture you see at the bottom is they're reworking and they're reconstructing the building that they're meeting in. And they're doing all the work themselves to save money. And so that's what they took a break to have this picture taken. And that church is growing. It started with Rhodey and another family. And today, the last Sunday they met, they had 55 people that were in attendance. They had to move to this place because they outgrew the other place they were in a period of 3 months. And so that work is growing, and we're grateful for that. And we had a prayer there for their work, and they prayed for us for our safe travels home. Now, going to the Philippines and coming back to the Philippines is about a 36-hour trip between layovers and time changes and going through customs and going through airports. I can't tell you how much good that is done by the opportunities that are presented to us. What I wish more than anything else is that you could see what I see. That you could experience what I've experienced. That you could see the gospel at work and watch it change the lives of people. I wish you could see that because I think it would encourage you. I think it would encourage you to know that this book is still the source of converting people to Christ. Nothing wrong with this book. The reason that we have so much success there, and not just in the Philippines, I could tell you this story in India, I could tell you this story of West Africa, I could tell you in Northern Africa. The reason that these poverty-driven countries, that the gospel is so receptive, is because their aim and focus is not here. It's on eternal things. Because they have nothing here. They look at us as rich people. And indeed, in their eyes, we are. And according to the ways that they live, we are. But what they see as a blessing in our country is a detriment. Because our riches and our wealth and our prosperity has made many people self-sufficient to believe that they don't need God and that they did it all themselves. In the Philippines, we don't have that problem. They understand poverty. They accept it. They understand that their lot in life will not get better. They've accepted it. They do the best they can. You know, we talk about getting by one day at a time. They don't just talk about it. They live it every day. Every day is a challenge. Every day to just get one day behind them is another day that they live, and they're thankful to God that they got through the day. But as I told you this morning, I've never met a people that are more happy and more contented than the Filipino people. And the reason is because they know they have better things that lie ahead of them. And I wish that my brethren and this country could have that attitude to understand that the blessings they have are not because of them. It's because of God. And again, I want to thank you for allowing me to go and be gone and to participate in these things, because every time I come back, my faith is strengthened. And I am resolved, as long as my health holds out, to go back again, Lord willing, in 2015, to go back on another trip. One day, the doors in the Philippines will close. And we will not be able to go in there, just like in other countries. We were able to go into Lithuania for a while, and then the Iron Curtain opened up. We were able to go in there, and then they became westernized. And the more that they became westernized, the less they needed religion. And the doors were closed, and we can't go back in there. The same thing will happen in the Philippines someday. One of the things that we're trying to do in the Philippines is to get them off of being so dependent upon us. But brethren, the reason that they're dependent upon us is they do not have the ability and the means that we have. They cannot accomplish the things that we can accomplish in a short amount of time. We can reach more people in these seminars than they can reach in a year. And that's why we go. We go in order to get the gospel to as many souls as we can get, that we might convert them to Christ. And in this brief trip, we were able to convert 79 people. All to the glory and the honor of God. Again, not because of what me and Ron did. We just built upon the work that the Filipino brethren had done. And one of the things that people have asked me over and over again is, do they remain faithful? I've been asked that on many occasions. And the answer to that, and I can tell you from first-hand experience, I would say that 95% of the people that we convert remain faithful. I go back years later. People that were converted on prior trips, and they're still there. And they're still working. And so what I would ask you to do is to pray for those people. Pray for God's comfort and strength and encouragement. They have a difficult life. It is not easy being a Christian in the Philippines. But I want to leave you with this little tidbit of information. If the conversion rate continues like it has in the last 5 years in the Philippine Islands, there will be more Christians in the Philippines than there will be in America. Think about that. There's 22 million people in the Philippines. There's 310 in America. Think about that. It's mind-boggling. I want you to know that I have not given up on my country. I'm going to do everything I can to try to encourage people to obey the gospel in this community and in everywhere I go. But I'm also going to try to open the doors to other countries. I'm not one of these people that want to become a world evangelist. I don't want to go into other... It was hard enough for me to learn the Filipino culture. That's all I want to learn. I know that. I know my way around there pretty well. I know brethren pretty well. And that's where I'm going to focus. If I go overseas, that's where I'm going to go. Until my health or the doors are closed and will not allow me to go. What I would ask you to do is to remember that it's not just about us. Our family extends a long way. Not just in this country, but all over the world. And we need to fervently pray that doors would be open, that we could convert people to Christ. If you have any questions or further comments that you want to know, feel free to ask me. But in the next few days, I'll be putting a report on the board, in the bulletin board in the back. And next to it will be a financial statement. And in that financial statement, you'll be able to see where, how the money was spent that I gathered and was entrusted to me. And then in about a week or a week and a half, because I still have money, I just got a call this afternoon of $1,100 that's coming from a congregation where my brother preaches, where my brother attends in Hammond, Indiana. And I'm going to add that to what I have. And when it's all said and done, I'll probably have raised and given out about $15,000 in benevolence. And what that money, every nickel of that money has gone to buy food, to buy water, to buy medicine, and to buy material to help people re-erect their homes, to protect their families. And brethren, that's money that's well spent. Because there are people that appreciate it. And there are people that are our brethren that are in need. And many of you helped me in that area. And I want to tell you, I thank you. Those brethren, thank you. What you did for them, they'll never be able to repay you. But they are so grateful and thankful that you are willing to open up your heart. And so am I. And so am I. We don't want to close this service without giving you an opportunity to render obedience to the gospel or to make your life right with God. I don't know the condition of everyone that's here. And if we can make your life right with God by obeying the gospel or by making your life right, we would ask that you would come forward and let it be known as together we stand and as we sing.